With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello and welcome to the Analyst Inside Cricket. We're in good spirits today after that England victory, 191 runs. They beat South Africa by in that fourth test at the Wanderers, 3-1 series victory after losing the first test. And actually, I've had quite a long day today because I was watching the Big Bash first, starting at about 3 a.m, moving on to England against South Africa. I've just worked out, Simon, I've seen 574 runs today, because 300 runs in the Big Bash game and 274 all out for South Africa. 574 runs, that's quite a lot of boundaries.
And what about 20-plus wickets as well?
20-plus wickets. Yeah. So I've seen a full match in about 10 hours' worth. But great to see England really enjoying that, finishing the game in 4 days. Here's to four-day test cricket. We can, we'll part that debate. But England generally, really good today, and it's capped an excellent turnaround in the series, hasn't it?
Well, yeah, superb from England, really. And at the start of the series, I felt that South Africa would be tougher to beat than a lot of people were suggesting. A lot of people, you've got to remember, at the start of the series, so this is what my point about not getting too carried away, a lot of people expected England to go to South Africa and win the series. Well, that's exactly what they've done. They've beaten a South African side that's not great. I think it's the worst side since readmission, or the weakest side since readmission. You look down their lineup, how many players do you fear? De Kock is a good player, leading run scorer in the series, but he gives you a chance. So, is he capable of getting those really punishing scores that debilitate a bowling fielding side? And then look at the bowling. Rabada is a class bowler, missed the last test match. Didn't perhaps have the impact on the series that South Africa were hoping. But apart from those two, actually, Norkie's had a good series. But, there aren't that many players that you fear in that South African lineup. So, England have gone to South Africa. They've done what a lot of people are expecting them to do. I actually thought South Africa would put up more resistance than they did. Although, once I started to see them, I think in about the 1.5 test matches, I sort of realised some of the problems they had and their weaknesses. So, I think we expected England to win, and they've done that. So, what do they take out of it? I think you need to be sort of cautiously optimistic about England from here. It's slightly new look side. Younger players have done well, which is good, isn't it? It's been an all round display for England.
Yeah. And I think a couple of things I'd identify that England can take out of this. One is two totals of over 400 in consecutive Test matches, batting first. The first time 499, and then the second time just over 400. So that set up two games, two victories. And the other thing is they've taken 20 wickets in all four Test matches away from home. Now, we know England are excellent at taking wickets at home with the Duke's ball, but not so good at taking 20 wickets in a Test match away from home with the Kookaburra ball. And they've done that with a variety of different people. So Anderson in one Test match taking five with swing and seam, Dominic Best taking a 5-wicket haul with his off-spin. First time that a young off-spinner or young spinner for England has taken 5 wickets away from home for God knows how long. And then, in this test match, Mark Wood, raw pace and hostility, taking 5 wickets in an innings. So, in 3 different conditions, a spinning pitch in Cape Town, a flat pitch in Port Elizabeth, and one with a bit of uneven bounce and pace in Johannesburg, they've shown their adaptability with the attack. And South Africa haven't made even 300 once.
That's right. No 300s in the series for South Africa.
Which says a fair bit about them, yeah, as much as it does about England's hostility and potency.
Well, it also says something about the toss as well. So I think the tosses were really important in this series. England won every single toss, and all four test matches were won by the side batting first. We've bemoaned the fact that pitches haven't deteriorated much around the world in recent years, but actually I think the pitches here did deteriorate. They did go up and down. They did spin at times, Port Elizabeth, for example. So I think it was hard to bat second and fourth, especially fourth in the test match. So England, you know, definitely had the benefit there. And it would have been fascinating, actually, to see England batting second in some of the test matches, just to sort of test them a bit more. Anyway, they didn't. You can't go with the ifs of history. They batted first, and they won 3-1. Often we look forward, don't we? You say, what does this mean? Look at the strength of the two sides. What does this mean for England in the future, for Sri Lanka, for India, for Australia in 2 years' time? Are they developing a potent test team again? Is it a new side that's emerging? Sometimes I actually just have to stop and say that sometimes there are great stories in sport, and Mark Wood's renaissance, rejuvenation, fitness in this series has been one of them. He played in the World Cup final, he played on the winning side in the World Cup final. He's had to go through all that rehabilitation after injury,
and
he's come out,
and
he's
produced, mental side,
and he's man of the match in the last game. And what a fantastic achievement.
That's true, and it's the mental resilience, isn't it, to come back as well from that high point of the World Cup final, then the dejection of losing your fitness and not playing any cricket after that.
Yeah, missing the Ashes for a start.
Yes, yeah. And which, of course, had featured in the last time. So you see all that going on, unfolding in front of you, and you can't be part of it. But to still have the heart to come back, and actually come back as a better bowler. He's bowling with a longer run-up now, which gives him, I think, a bit more momentum to the crease. There's still that horrible sort of teeth-rattling impact at the crease, which I'm sure is going to cause him further injury problems down the line. But in these 2 test matches, and in back-to-back games as well, he sustained his pace superbly and bowled intelligently as well as fast. You know, he used the conditions very well. He had a great seam position. He moved the ball a little bit in the air. He bowled very good lengths, I thought. I like the way that he goes round the wicket against the tail-enders and bowls those horrible sort of skiddy bounces into the ribs, gives them the tail-enders some hurry up and slightly intimidating. So, you know, I just like the way he used the conditions. And you know, what a joy to watch him bat as well.
Well, that's the other thing. I mean, it's fantastic, isn't it?
He thinks he's all-rounded, doesn't he?
Well, yeah, free spirit. You've got to keep playing the same way, haven't you, really? Just, you know, judicious attacking. Well, some of it was injudicious, actually, but backing away and smacking it over a wide third man. But yeah, it was joyous, actually. And actually,
yeah, he plays with a smile on his face all the time, doesn't
exactly
he?
His cricket is joyous. It's great to watch him. He's a funny bloke. We had him in the BBC commentary box during the Ashes series, and it was great to have him there as well. You can understand how he's so popular in the dressing room, and he sort of takes that onto the field. I mean, when he's fit and confident, I mean, that's a very, very good cricketer England have there. But, you know, the key and the difficulty is maintaining that fitness consistently, as you mentioned, you know, that leap when he bowls and the pressure, the shock going through his body.
Somehow they're going to have to manage him. I don't know how that's going to work, because you just never know when these injuries are going to suddenly get worse again. Probably Sri Lanka is going to be a waste of time for him. It's not a place where seamers can get much out of it.
But
he might get some reverse swing, I suppose. So, but and also World Test Championship points are available for those 2 tests against Sri Lanka. So England will definitely be focusing on getting, if they can, 120 points out of that series and making them really climb closer to Australia and India. It means this series victory that England are still in third spot in the World Test Championship, but they're slightly closer to India and Australia. And I think we're seeing there potentially a sort of breakaway of those three teams, India, Australia, India on 360, Australia, what is it, 286?
296.
296. England, 146. So, and then the next team, 80. So, you know, those three teams just looking a little bit better than the rest. How are England compared to Australia and India? Well, they're the next two big opponents away from home. I know we've got Sri Lanka two test series, but the big series coming up, India next winter, Australia the winter after. So what England have shown is that they can take wickets away from home with the Kookaburra in different conditions, but that those two teams, Australia and India, are going to be a severe test still. Yeah. England are well short of them at the moment.
Yeah, they took 80 wickets, but against a fallible South African batting lineup, you know, this has not been the South Africa of the past. And actually, even the South Africa of the past, England have done well there. That's four consecutive series they've played away, played in South Africa, where they've come away undefeated. For some reason, they have a very good record in South Africa. They're always good competitive series. This one actually probably a bit less so, although England did have to come from one down to win the series. But England have a very good record in South Africa. So, I don't know. I would reserve judgment on England, you know, what it means and the renaissance of this England test side. I've still got those memories of trying to get BJ Watling out at the Bay Oval when their bowling attack, even, you know, with Archer in it, no wood, of course, Archer in it, looked a bit toothless. What about Jofra Archer then? England have won without him.
And I know he's worried. He's concerned about his injury, which we talked about on this programme before. That elbow injury is something that can really bug you, dog you, be hard to shake off. I hope to goodness he does. And, you know, the rehabilitation and medical treatment of cricketers now is so much better than it used to be. But I remember having an elbow injury of a similar nature myself, and it took a long time, and I probably never really completely shook it off. Hopefully he'll be able to recover that potency, because he will. I mean, you imagine Archer and Wood together.
Well, that was the hope here, wasn't it, at the Wanderers, is that you could see them in action together.
But it may be that they alternate, and that's fine, actually. I think if it's a five-test series and you've got one guy who can bowl 90-plus, plus also Stokes. You know, we should just talk about Ben Stokes, because we'll have a look at one or two of the other performances, England individual performances, but Stokes is the man of the series. He's a warrior-like all-rounder. I think he's already a great all-rounder, and his all-round stats in this series?
10 wickets at 22.
Always hostile. I mean, even today, bowling, you know, aggressively, bowling consistently.
Well, that's the point as well. When Root's looking for a wicket, he chucks the ball to Ben Stokes. I mean, they leave him sort of later rather than sooner these days, because they're nursing him through this knee problem that he's got. He had it in New Zealand, and they're looking to manage him a bit. But looking for a wicket, chuck the ball to Stokes, and there's quite a lot of times in this series that he has come up with a wicket and actually vital wickets.
Well, he got Elgar, didn't he, here?
Yeah, he got Elgar in this match, yeah, in the second innings. Caught and bowled. He also got rid of Duplessis as well. So two big wickets at the top. So 10 wickets at 22. Doesn't sound like a huge amount, or 10 wickets, but vital wickets.
And he's from your number five batsman.
Yeah, and 318 runs at 45. And 12 catches as well in the series. Okay, he did drop a few, a couple of them goobers as well, but, you know, he just that all-round impact.
And the catching, generally, those catches he took in Cape Town, there were some absolute screamers. That just lifts a team. You know, if you're battling to take wickets and somebody plucked one out of the air like that, you know, it gives everybody that much more heart to know that, you know, someone there is going to snaffle them pretty much wherever they are. It also means, from a batting point of view, you know, if I edge it, he's going to catch me. And so it just makes the batsman a bit more apprehensive as well. And there was definitely apprehension about the way that South Africa batted overall. Stokes, as you say, is the man that Root can turn to. I mean, you can just see there's this sort of bromance going on between Root and Stokes. Root loves him to bits, and just the fact that he can call on him in any situation. The top captains, successful captains, need a warrior-like figure. Stokes is definitely that.
You talked about looking ahead and India and Australia. I mean, if you did have Stokes, Wood and Archer fit and firing in 2 years' time, it's not a bad attack to take to the gabatoir for that first Test match. Obviously, you know, we're getting ahead of ourselves. A lot of cricket to be played before then. You know, injuries come along, and who knows where Australia will be in a couple of years' time.
I want England to find somebody who bowls like Josh Hazlewood, a tall bowler, because Wood is short, skiddy. Archer is tall, but not as tall as Hazlewood. And Hazlewood bowls that really awkward length at all the Australian pitches, where he's a bit fuller than you think, but he's still hitting the top of the bat all the time.
In the last 40 years, 50 years, whatever, since you've been watching Test cricket, which England bowler is most like Josh Hazlewood? Well, what are you talking about?
Well, I suppose a combination of Angus Fraser, when he was absolutely at his best, which was only for about 3 years. He was bowling around about that pace. And just briefly, Chris Tremlett, who obviously played in that...
So a combination of the two?
Well, no, I mean...
Those two bowlers?
One of those in their pomp. So Chris Tremlett, who played in that 2011 Ashes winning series, was really effective on Australian pitches, but his impact didn't last long. You know, he's a bodybuilder now. Mm. Have you seen any of those pictures?
I haven't, but I've heard he is.
You don't want to cross him in a dark night. He's enormous.
So he's not just... Well, he was always...
He's tall, but wide.
But wide as well. Yeah, OK, I'll give that one a miss. But, OK, before Australia... OK, it's all very well talking about Australia in a couple of years' time and pace options, and you don't know where the bowlers are going to be in terms of fitness. But before then, there's spin tests. Hmm. So Sri Lanka and India are the next two away tours. Very different from what they've had so far this winter, with New Zealand and slow, low pitches, and then South Africa, where there is some bit of help. There is Banks. There's even Banks for the pace bowlers. OK, there was some spin in Port Elizabeth. What do England do, and how well-stocked is that cupboard, really?
Well, I mean, it's not bad. It's better than it was, I think, because there's a bit more consistency there. And I think Leach and Best together could work as a pair, augmented by perhaps Moeen Ali as well. I could see those three all bringing slightly different elements. So Leach, consistency without a lot of spin. I think Bess has some guile and flight, and he can turn the ball. And I think he's an emerging, potentially very good bowler. I'm not saying he's going to be a great bowler, but I think he could be very effective. And Moeen, 180 test wickets, great experience. If they could persuade him to come and play in Sri Lanka... Three-pronged spin attack, probably as good as Sri Lanka's spin attack.
Degree of difficulty compared to Sri Lanka and South Africa, where would you place it? Do you think it would be harder for England to go to Sri Lanka and win the series? I know they won 3-0 last time there, but...
I know they're going to make flatter pitches. I don't think it'll be harder. I don't think Sri Lanka are not great, are they? Have they got any real major stars? A couple, maybe, but... I think England should outgun them. Sri Lanka are always going to be handy players with some natural talent, but England should be disciplined, the fielding, the hostility of the fast bowlers, the dedication of the batsmen. Obviously, different challenges. People like Sibley, not really all that certain about how to play spin, but there's only one way to find out if he can do it. Let's have a go. Mm.
So you think, actually, about on a par?
I think England should beat Sri Lanka with this side.
We focused on quite a lot of the positives from England's series. Well, actually, not all the positives yet, because we could talk about Dominic Sibley, who was the leading run scorer. People have questioned his technique, etc. But a couple of the minus points of the tour. Joe Denley at number three, 210 runs at 30, still lacking that big score. And Joss Butler... behind the stumps, well, with the bat in hand, 116 runs at 16.42. The transition from batsman to batsman wicketkeeper so far hasn't produced the numbers for him. What do England do there? Persevere and see where they go with it? See if they can produce that big score and, in Butler's case, runs down the order?
Well, I think Denley... difficult, isn't it? Because he's done okay without ever sort of setting the world alight. You know, he reminds me a little bit of the way Mark Raprakash struggled in Test cricket. Looks great, plays lovely shots, and then just gets out. And at times doesn't rotate the strike. I think he struggles against spin. He likes pace on the ball, so he's going to find it difficult in Sri Lanka. Whether he's the right option at number three, I don't know. I'm not sure he is. I don't think he's one for the future. If it was possible to play Burns, Sibley and Crawley as the top three, that would be my preference, but Burns isn't going to be fit. So probably Denny will get another go, I'd say. Butler, I would stick with, actually, because I think he's got something different as a player. Although I totally see Ben Folkes' credentials as wicketkeeper batsman, I just think that I would still invest in Butler because he's got something extra as a batsman. He can take a game away from a team. He just needs to play with a bit more confidence.
We talked about Ben Folkes on the podcast last week, and you put out the call. You know, where is he? Is he fit? But I understand that he's fine.
He's been training at Surrey. Yeah, yeah. He's raring to go for anyone who'll have him, basically.
Yeah, because he hasn't played any cricket since last September. And you sort of look down the list of players, and normally, you know, someone's played somewhere, haven't they? In a league somewhere, or played some cricket somewhere around the world, but nothing for Ben Folkes since last September.
What about you? What's your hunch on that?
On whether,
Butler or Folkes?
Well, you know what I would like to see? I would like to see Ben Folkes keep wicket, and I'd like to see Josh Butler bat. In other words, as an amalgam of the two, really. You want Butler's batting and Folkes' wicketkeeping, but of course you can't have that. You know, that sort of...
Well, you can.
You could. What I mean is actually combine that two cricket. I suppose I wish that Butler's keeping was as good as Folkes or near to Folkes, and perhaps you wish that Folkes' batting was as good or as devastating as Butler's. That's what I think I would, in an ideal world, what you would have. But that's
sitting on the fence.
Well, that's sort of Adam Gilchrist. No, I would keep going with Butler. I would keep going with Butler, mainly because I suppose it's a sort of selfish thing. When I go to cricket, you want to see people that can excite you. You want to see people who, when they come into bat, you watch a bit more keenly. You know, you're not sort of dozing. You're right on it. And Butler's one of those players, especially in white ball. Well, mainly in white ball.
And he's just such a good influence in the team. And I'm not saying Ben Folkes wouldn't be, but I think everyone loves him. He's just a positive atmosphere around the team generally. A good chap, a good team man.
Mm. I mean, they have shown they're prepared to be ruthless. You know, Johnny Bairstow has been dispatched, and it might be they just say, Joss, it's not working, is it? Actually, let's just concentrate on white ball cricket and bring in Ben Folkes. So yeah, it remains to be seen what they're going to do about that. So, you know, it's possible that they could be ruthless about that one.
So England overall, they'd be pleased with Sibley's output. I'm still not quite convinced about his method. And I think he will be targeted around the leg stump by a lot of seam bowlers with fielders in catching positions at leg gully and probably short mid-wicket or something.
It's so weird, that, isn't it? Because normally you'd say, oh, yeah, you target him around about fourth, fifth stump.
He's got that kind of cover, doesn't he? The other thing is, he does play across his front pad. And I would also, if I was a quickish bowler, one of the faster Sri Lankans, I'd be looking to bowl very full and straight because I think he does play around his front pad. So I'm not entirely convinced about his method, but certainly mental approach, excellent. Crawley, still a work in progress as well, getting slightly better. I feel he's a bit stiff. He's a little bit rigid as a player. So when he drives, he doesn't really flow into the ball. And also pulling, he sort of pulls off the front foot with a rather static body. So I don't know if batsmen can do this, but if he could work on mobility a bit more, just be a bit more nimble, look at the way Root plays without trying to actually copy him, just look at the way he moves around the crease. He sort of floats around the crease, whereas I feel that Crawley's a bit sort of planted. And for floating and just fluency of movement, Ollie Pope, what a fantastic discovery he has been. I mean, he played a couple of partnerships with Root, and you could barely tell the difference between them. And there's Joe Root with one of the most runs ever scored by an England batsman. He's in the top 10 now with the best average of any of England's top 10 run scorers, about 48, his average is. And yet, you've got Ollie Pope in his, fifth or sixth test, looking equal to England's master. The way he deposits the ball through the leg side, his defence, his application, his beautiful wrists into the ball, his recognition of situations, how to play, his range of shots when you're batting with the tail. just his smart attitude to the game is highly impressive.
Yeah, well, he's clearly a class player in the making. What will happen, of course, is he'll have some dips as well, and people start to say, oh, you know, he needs to be taken out of the side. And that's fine, because players come in, do well, and there aren't that many players that aren't dropped at some point in their career. But he does look to have that all-round game. And I would say probably, in a way, from this winter, that's one of the really big positives for England. There's a young player there with an all-round technique, a technique that can work in all sorts of situations, in all sorts of countries around the world. That's the hope, anyway. If he continues that improvement, that development in the next few years, England have got potentially a high-class player. So of all the big gains for England in South Africa, and there have been quite a lot because it's been an all-round team performance, I think he would be at the top of it. I mean, you know, with great performances from Root Solid and Stokes, and Sibley has had a good time of it. But Pope is up there, right up there, I would say.
Sam Curran's stats aren't necessarily outstanding. 10 wickets, though. And I think he'll be a very valuable player in Sri Lanka, because...
So he gets in the team with the spinners coming in, is he?
I think I might play him, actually, because... if you can fit him in, because rather than somebody like Stuart Broad, because he's got that left arm angle, he's skiddy, he doesn't make the ball bounce over the stumps, and you want to be bowling at the stumps in Sri Lanka. And of course, one of their most famous bowlers, Chamindavas, was exactly like Sam Curran, left arm over, about the same pace, about the same stature, similar kind of approach to bowling, trying to swing it both ways, but pitch it up, hit the stumps, bowl with the odd bit of few varieties as well, try and look to reverse swing it later. So he's similar to Minderwas, and he's got that benefit of being able to make quick runs and hit the ball in funny places and bat with confidence. He's not very good batting. See, in Australia, I don't think he'll be that effective. I think he'll be slightly intimidated by the taller, faster bowlers and probably won't get many runs. And I don't think his bowling will be that effective. But in Sri Lanka, on those slower, lower pitches, both batting and bowling could have an impact.
Well, Chamindavas, 355 test wickets in his 111 test matches. I think he's fairly... I'm fairly confident Sam Curran would take that.
Thing, of course, is if you're playing with an off-spinner... A left-arm over bowler does provide that bit of rough against the right-hand batsman. So that's why Chamindavas and Murali were a great double act. Chamindavas running in left-arm over down the wicket, creating a little bit of rough for the off-spinner Murali to aim into. So left-arm over and off-spin works well together.
Yeah. Isn't it the case, though, that Curran doesn't create that much rough?
Well, he needs to get bigger boots with longer spikes.
If only he were 6 inches taller, what a cricketer he would be.
Because actually, it's funny, but that may sound sort of facetious to say bigger boots, but the tall bowlers who have big feet create larger areas of rough. And also, further down the pitch, nearer to the right length for the bowler, the other end as well, because of their longer stride pattern, they do end up getting their rough in a more effective, useful area for the spin of the other end. So Sam Curran needs to go onto a rack to stretch his body a little bit and get those big sort of clodhopper boots so he can make a big mess when he follows through.
Stuart Broad, England's leading wicket taker in the series. He said to Archie, you know, you'll enjoy bowling with the Kookaburra bought in South Africa on South African pitches. Well, Archie only played one test match. He did take 6 wickets in it. Broad, though, 14 wickets in the series to go with his excellent Ashes series. I wonder whether with Stuart Broad, is that feeling that he sort of felt he was coming towards the end of his test match career, and there was a feeling that he had a job waiting for him in television. And in a way, he sort of relaxed. Just said, every game, every series is a bonus. There isn't that pressure on me now to perform week in, week out. OK, there is a pressure because you're playing for your country, but it's not the same pressure that he was under when he was younger. I wonder whether there's something in that, that he's sort of enjoying his cricket and...
Frees him up, sort of liberation.
Yeah, almost. And we saw it in his batting. And, yeah. I mean, in the first innings of this test match, I mean, what a partnership that was of glorious gay abandon. 82 in 8.2 overs. South Africa smashed everywhere. And they were just having enormous amounts of fun. Broad making 43. And, his batting these days is vulnerable. But if you let him get away, if you give him a few freebies, even now, he's a... you know, can be devastating. And actually, in a way, that partnership was the partnership that broke the... It broke South Africa's spirit, I think. They bowled England out for 320. You sort of got something to aim at, but 400 at the Wanderers felt like a really long haul. And South Africa didn't really have the technique, the fight for it, especially in that first innings. Mm.
What I really like about Broad is he's always evolving. So his bowling is... it's a sort of work in progress all the time, so he's looking to try and change the different grips and things he employs to take wickets, varying his pace, varying his position on the crease. He's always trying to think, how can I get the most out of myself to take wickets for England? And in this test match at the Wanderers, I thought he used the cross seam delivery very effectively, so he recognised there wasn't any seam movement, so in a way not much point in landing the ball seam up because it wasn't going to do anything. So if you go cross-seam, you get some balls which land on the leather and sort of keep low and skid, and then some balls which land on the ridge of the seam and kick a bit. And you could see the way they were trying to hit the cracks with cross-seam deliveries, and some were keeping a bit low, like the one that bowled Duplessis off the bottom of the bat, and some that kick up and take the glove, like the one that got Bavuma out. So, you know, very intelligent and creative use of the conditions.
Bowlers, when they're well into a ball, you know, 40 overs old, 50 overs old, how many cross-seam deliveries would they bowl and how many seam-up deliveries would they bowl? Talking about pace bowlers.
I would say until the last 5 or 6 years, 95% seam-up, the occasional ball cross-seam. But I personally used to like trying cross-seam deliveries because I wasn't making the ball move much, generally, and I found the variations you could get from cross-seam deliveries effective. Also, to tell you the truth, some days I couldn't control the swing and bowled, you know, both sides of the wicket, so I found cross-seam deliveries, which don't swing, a bit more effective and a bit more reliable. But I think over the last sort of 4 or 5 years, as bowlers have started using it more in one-day cricket, you know, someone like Liam Plunkett will bowl predominantly cross-seam deliveries in a one-day spell because he knows it comes off the surface at different speeds and slightly different heights according to whether the ball lands on the leather or on the seam. Now it's being used a little bit more in test cricket as well.
Mention of Liam Plunkett, of course, makes me think about the one-day series. The show must go on, the circus, the caravan moves on. It's the one-day is next, the white ball, 6 matches England play, 3 one-day internationals, 3 T20s. It will be England's first one-day international...
Since winning the World Cup.
So in about a week's time, in Cape Town, they take on South Africa, who, of course, they beat in that opening match in the World Cup. Strange in a way, because... In a way, the T20 matches have more significance because there is a World T20 Cup coming up in Australia later this year. But you know, you've got to keep on paying the bills, and so they, you know, the one-day cricket is not totally on the back burner.
And England are a selling point as a one-day side as well. So hopefully, those games will be well attended. I think England should thump South Africa, to be honest. I mean, what I worry about South Africa's future, really, because, you know, they're losing players consistently to England. So, you know, Morley Morkel obviously joined Surrey a couple of years ago, one of their ace bowlers. Now Vernon Philander's retiring and going off to Somerset to play for them. They've lost Carl Abbott as well. We don't know Duplessis' future. Obviously, de Villiers might play in the World T20s, possibly. Olivier, Dale Steyn's retired, Amla's retired. So, you know, they've lost a whole generation of superb cricketers, and you don't see the next generation being able to replace them. One or two elements of encouragement there with someone like Van der Dusen, for instance, and Anrich Nokia looks at a good prospect as well. But those two guys can't, with de Kock, can't support the team forever.
Lots of changes in South Africa's one-day squad. 5 newcomers, and de Kock... as captain, he was instrumental in South Africa winning the series against England last time, batted brilliantly at the top of the order, and you feel he's going to have to produce something scintillating at the top of the order to challenge England. But it's a fickle business, one-day cricket. You know, one man can win a game. In test matches, you need that all-round sort of effort, or at least you need 4 or 5 to be on their game, maybe 5 or 6 to be on their game. But one-day international, one man can win it, mainly with a brilliant innings. So we'll see. 3 one-day internationals starting in Cape Town next Tuesday, Durban and Johannesburg, and then three T20 matches. Owen Morgan continuing to lead the side. He led them in the white ball matches in New Zealand. I wonder where that will go, actually, with Owen Morgan and how much longevity there is in him as England's white ball captain. I'm thinking Australia at the end of the year. I wonder whether that will be it, that he sort of stays in on to lead England into the T20 competition in Australia, although having said that, there's another one in India the year after. I wonder whether you can see him going forward to the next World Cup in India in 4 years' time.
It's a good question. I think, you know, it'll depend how he goes in that World T20 in Australia, because if he still feels he's got the game... The thing about one-day cricket is it does move on very quickly. Mm. Evolution, fitness, power, speed, bowling skills, you know, all sort of evolve. And if he gets left behind because he's not playing a lot of other cricket, he might find it hard. But he might find that dipping in and out of tournaments for England keeps him going, keeps him fresh. Yeah, it's difficult to tell.
And there's that challenge, isn't there? That sort of tantalising challenge of trying to be the world 50-over champions and the world T20 champions at the same time. You think, well, why not give it a go? Why not? You know, you're talented enough, you're in control of the side enough, did well in New Zealand, batted well enough in New Zealand. Anyway, so it'll be fascinating to see how England get on in South Africa in the next couple of weeks. The show never stops, does it, really? The one day, the international cricket, it never stops, and then it won't be long before they're off to Sri Lanka, and then the IPL starts, and it all starts again, you know, with a domestic season. So it's not surprising the players have those lags every now and again, that perhaps someone like Joss Butler is in at the moment.
And I guess that might lead neatly into our subject for next week, which is something I promised actually a couple of weeks ago and haven't yet delivered, which is a whole investigation into the mental health of cricketers and why more and more seem to be suffering anxiety, stress, having to take time off because of the pressures of the modern game.
So that's next week. This is this week, and England have won 3-1 in South Africa. Lots of people expected them to do it, but they have delivered.
Well played.
Goodbye for now.
Podcast Network.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from, with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.